Those on both sides of the political spectrum look at what has become of the great state of California, and they wonder, what happened? This wondering leads us to ask, did California eat too much nonsense?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,415th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among a friend over there in Paphos, who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, for the first time in history, California is losing population. 54,000 people left Los Angeles last year alone. The Golden State of California has become the U-Haul ass state. Why are people leaving? The fact is, California has been subsumed by the unintended consequence of political good intentions. Even the political elite know it. One wonders, what happened to their common sense? Perhaps it was the food, the ultra-processed, nutrient-deficient, wrapped-in-plastic food that promises to be cheap, but is really very expensive. Whatever the cause, common sense has flown out the window, and people are fleeing from the most attractive geography in the world. Last year, I did manage to find some common sense in an Adam Carolla podcast focused on the Los Angeles fires. His guest was Palisades resident Elaine Culotti. Her home had survived the fire, but her neighborhood is pretty much burned to a crisp. As the two cruised the Palisades for the camera, Culotti's commentary about the politics of the fire made a lot of sense. So I went looking. I found that Elaine Culotti is a real estate developer of luxury homes, casinos, and hospitals in America's largest county and elsewhere, Los Angeles, of course. I found Elaine Culotti in Discovery Channel's Undercover Billionaire, in which she was given $100 and told to go to a town she had never been in before and start a business that turns $1 million profit in 90 days. And I found Elaine Culotti as the lipstick farmer of the Big Z Ranch in Fallbrook, where she grows food, hosts farm table dinners, and advocates that city people should have access to real food grown in real soil by real farmers. Somewhere along the line, I came to believe that Elaine Culotti's farm sense is just what Sacramento needs, and so started suggesting to all who would listen, it's time for a farmer. Someone must have heard, because Elaine Culotti has announced that she is running to be California's next governor. Today, we are going to sample some of the farm sense Elaine Culotti brings to the table with her proposal to bring real food to the people of California's cities by train. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Elaine Culotti, the lipstick farmer.
Thank you, Michael. Amazing intro. That was really nice of you.
Fun writing it because you're an amazing person and you have so many elements. My goodness.
That many. I mean, you know, when you make babies, you start to think about how are you going to raise them? And once you start to think about raising a human, there's so many like things you have to do when you raise a human. It's innate. It's in all of us. The luxuries of life make you forget how capable you are.
Great distractions, aren't they?
They are. They really are. Yes. Yeah. And I think that I had a little reset on Undercover Billionaire because they were all gone. I was like, whoa, get scrappy one more time.
One more time. Why lipstick farmer?
Well, I mean, because I'm a girl in farming. Come on. What do you want? There's not a lot of women in farming in that are recognizable. Like you don't, there are plenty of women farmers, but they're not running around like I am screaming from every top of everything saying, hey, listen, look at me. I'm doing that because I'm telling people that farming is for everyone, okay? Farming is for everybody. And why? Well, because it is your source of life. If you don't have good food, you can't advocate yourself about anything. ultimately, bad food will be the demise of every human. Our food, our supply chain for food is fundamentally the most important thing. It's how healthy children are born. So you can't ignore it. And I try to tell people that it's not the left against the right, or the big ag against the, you know, little ag. I try to explain to people it's not against these little fights. It's actually the human race against anybody trying to profit on it. And if you look at it like that, okay, if you start to think it's all of us against that, it's pretty easy to get on my team. Stop telling me that they're doing it right and whatever. No, it's us. It's my body, my choice, my stomach, my babies, my little eggs, my little world. And if I'm putting something in there and I don't know what it is, okay, what comes out doesn't know what it is either. And all I'm saying is be aware if you're being poisoned. Don't think I'm crazy. Okay. Take a look around you. And oh, by the way, these are poisonous. You know, everything has effect, a cause. You do something and that action gets a reaction. And just make sure that whatever the reaction is, it's working for you.
Well, my reaction to the lipstick farmer was that, wait, she's bringing together two elements that typically are not associated together, which is the lipstick of a city person. You know, it's a city thing to do. And farming, which lipstick is not a part of. And you brought them together to suggest that maybe they should be together. Maybe city and farm should be together. Maybe we should stop thinking of them as being something necessarily different.
We certainly should stop making urban farming a
joke. Like,
well, a challenge. Like, why do we have so much red tape? And why is open space not for farming? We have so much open space. And it's and the city, especially in LA, they have a wildlife division. They have the tree group that checks on what trees can and can't be cut. I think you have to have a permit when you're building to go through what trees are unprotected and what are not. You have all sorts of agricultural regulations in terms of what you can keep. And I'm not saying that, you know, like, you don't want to live next to somebody who has a dairy farm. I get it. I understand that they need to be in an ag area. But we should be able to have our own gardens, and we should be able to trade food amongst ourselves. And my experience with that, even in San Diego County with a 40 plus acre farm, it's not that easy. Okay. You cannot, in all good consciousness, tell me that my farm stand that does, you know, thousands of community supported agriculture CSA boxes for schools is interfering with big farming. You cannot say that. That's not fair and it's not true. But it's an optic that is passed around, and it makes it difficult because then you have ag oversights. For example, I currently have a ticket for my sign is too big. Okay. That's a ticket I have right now. There's always a ticket. It's always something. It's my cow's milk or my goat milk or my cheese or whatever. And so I don't just go pay the tickets. I fight it. You know, and there's a lot of fight left in me, which is why I'm running for governor of California, because everyone's going to get a citation. If you speed too fast, you're going to get a speeding ticket. You might not get it the first time or the second time, but eventually you're going to get one. And if you were going too fast, pay the ticket. That's just pay the ticket. But they start adding all these rules and all these regulations to stop you from driving. You have to fight. And that's what they're doing.
Part of your resume suggests that you're a developer in Los Angeles. And that brings to mind Donald Trump, who was a developer in Manhattan. How did you two do it? How on earth do you go up against all of those rules and regulations and somehow survive to build things when there are all of those rules and regulations are seemingly designed to just make you go away? Why didn't you go away?
Well, I think for a long time, I grew up in a military family. My dad was in the Air Force. My mom was an English immigrant. And he used to say to me, if you can't follow the small rules, you'll never be able to follow the big rules. So I'm a rule follower, not a rule breaker. I've always been that way. And in development, that's actually served me well. I've lost track of the times that I've said to clients and friends and people in the industry that it's the Department of Building and Safety. They're not actually just there to get fees. They're actually there for your well-being. And I've stuck up for the structure of our building government. But I think it's fair now at this point in my life for me to say this with complete honesty to all of America, not just California, and including Donald Trump in New York and everywhere you go. If you don't have a bill for a bill, if you don't let lawyers pay the fees when they lose a case, if you let the legal system run completely amok, what happens is you stop everything from flowing. Because again, it is not one thing against another, how we're being pitted. It is us against profiteers. And attorneys fall into the profiteer bucket. I know that's, you know, and I have attorneys in my family and I love you guys. I understand the necessary evil of having a lawyer. But if the lawyer is making the rules that you cannot follow, no matter how hard you try, it is the tail wagging the dog, right? You're here to help us move forward. You're not here to stop things. But the EPA is a great example. Any citizen can challenge something environmentally on something that's been fully approved. It happens all the time. So remember that every single law that gets implemented, again, it's an action that gets a reaction.
Really quickly, I see you running as not a Republican and not a Democrat, but an independent. Now, does that give you some freedom that you would not otherwise have if you were locked into a party?
So running as an NPP, that's called no party preference, is how everybody should run, how everybody should vote, okay? All of you, Democrats and Republicans, you're being tricked into this whole shenanigans. It's shenanigans. Do not pay any attention to it. Do not go for it. You're being lied to. It's a big, fat lie. Two parties is a lie. This country is a three-party state, okay? A three-party state. It's the, I'm not kidding around here, okay? The Democrats and the Republicans, those two, I'm going to put these two fingers down right on your show.
They're worse.
Go for the independents, okay? We are the middle. If you don't go for the independents, you're completely missing the grift. It's a grift. So the Democrats have their lobbyists. And the Republicans have theirs. In the middle, we have none.
Well, I want to thank you for acknowledging my preference that has been my preference from the get-go as an independent. I always like to think of the Republicans and Democrats and whoever else is running as being a restaurant. And what do you have to offer me to eat? And you better be good or I'm not going to tend to your restaurant. Ladies and gentlemen, we are this is a Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Elaine Coulati. It's going to be a very exciting show, so stay tuned as we head down the road with, hey, the lipstick farmer and candidate for governor of California, right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. We were talking about the independence of being a no-party person. And one of the things that I really wonder about is the impact of money on politicians. And another thing I admired about Donald Trump was that he had enough money that he really didn't need to get bought off. He had that independence that he could say no to whoever he wanted to. And you've been a very successful person in your life, Elaine Colati, in a number of different fields. Do you feel like you have the independence to say no to all of the corruption and scamology and everything else that has taken over California?
Well, first of all, I mean, my first job was shoe shining. So I grew up with, you know, having to really like figure out how I was going to be a rich girl. Because I admired those kind of things when I was little, because my first look at America was going to San Diego and seeing my, you know, aunt and uncle in their big place with all of their toys and their jet skis and their little three-wheelers, and the kids were blonde and tan. And I had this thing in my head that when I came back from living in Germany and England when I was a kid, I was going to be a rich girl living in California with my own boat and my own stuff. So I fantasized about that as a child. Like, I was entrepreneurial as a kid. I always wanted to just be independent and do my own thing. And when I came to California, I hit the ground running. You know, I didn't stop working. I'd never stopped working. And I don't believe the first thing I hear. I never have. I've always been very curious. And about politics, I guess I just assumed they were doing the right thing until I realized that they weren't. Does that make sense? It wasn't like a long history of, oh, I don't trust the government at all. I just realized, you know, during the first Trump administration, when Donald Trump won in 2016, I lost a lot of friends because I thought it was kind of cool that this guy won. And everyone was like, how can you think that?
Like me, right?
Yeah. How can you think that? And I was like, I do. You know, I didn't really like understand in 2016 what it was to have this outsider on the inside, to have the outsider on inside, and to remove the mask, and how many people would be angry that the mask was being removed, and then how many people would cover that the mask was being removed and try to stop the mask from coming off. And then after he lost in 2020, how many people would rally together to try to duct tape and staple together a candidate for the new president. Like, that to me was like, it was so fascinating. And because of COVID, I think a lot of people were really glued to like their TV and an insular environment. And you had, if you were thinking, I was farming and working on trying to get food to LA and doing all kinds of stuff. Undercover Billionaire was also during that time. And it occurred to me that we are, again, independent people. All of us are independent people. Do not tell yourself because you've been a Democrat or you've been a Republican that you don't have an independent mind. You do. And your gut instinct is so important. You have to follow your gut. And if your gut is that it's not right, if it's not right, follow it. Trust it, because there's not a lot you can trust out there, but you should trust your intuition. And my intuition told me that it's all bought and paid for. That's it. It just told me it's all bought and paid for. So to answer your question, do I have enough money to pay for myself to run for governor? Definitely not. Do not think it is not free. It's very expensive. But when people help me, they help me because they love me and they know that I will do the best with that money that I can possibly do to have my voice heard. And I write policy. So I've spent 100% of my money writing policy. I like to write an idea out. I always have, even when I was young. Even if I wrote it on a cocktail napkin, I wrote it out. What am I going to do first? What am I going to do second? How is it going to mobilize? What's it going to look like? And I started to write policy. And the reason that I started to write policy is because I couldn't understand how we got here. And I knew that if we untangled it a little bit, that we could fix it. In my head, if we untangle it a little bit, we can fix it. I cannot tell you how important it is, California. It's a Samson and Goliath story. We need to honor the middle in California. It is 31% of registered voters. It is 6.9 million people. These people are the people that have dropped the pilot. That's an old Joan Armatrading training song, by the way. They are not going to deal with it. There are 31% of us who have said, no kings. No kings. And don't think it's one-sided. It is not. Those no kings rallies are not. It's not one-sided, okay? He who would be king is a Democrat or a Republican. The middle is for us. It's for us. It is not corrupted. It is not corrupted by AIPAC. It is not corrupted by the Realtors Association. It is not corrupted by Big Pharma. It is not corrupted. The middle is us. What do we want for California? And my biggest statement I can make is we cannot rely on the billionaires class. We are being microdosed and drugged by the income of the billionaires. They are drugging us. They're dropping and microdosing money into our economy, $122 billion annually, which is 47% of our budget. And we are reliant on them like heroin. We need them. We need them to keep paying our bills. And we got to fix it. And the way to do it, drop the pilot. Just drop it. Don't do it. We'll be fine. We'll walk if we have to. But we need our state back. And they're trying to bankrupt us. They're trying to kill us. They are after us. And it is the billionaire class. It is not the working class. And I don't fall into that. The fires is an example of what happens because of a different reason.
Well, when you fires.
Yes, when you drive around after the fires and all the stuff is burnt down, you see that they have never spent a penny on our roads, on our fire hydrants, on our bridges, on our bulkheads, on our brush clearance, on our water storage, on our schools. Nothing. No infrastructure money. Zero. The fires just showed it. Open your eyes. It burned it all down and it's all there for you to see. Where did the money go? Where did our hard-earned tax dollars go? Up and out. Up and out. It did not go into our soil. It did not go into our farmers. It did not go into our waterways, our ports, our railroad, our roads, our trucking, our supply chain. None of it's all gone. And if we rehire these idiots, it will be gone for a long time to come. The time is now. Just say no to it. Do not vote for it. Just reach out to an independent. You're not voting for me. You're voting for us. You're voting for freedom from this. Getting out from underneath it is a Samson and Goliath story. We have to get out from underneath it.
Time for a farmer.
I will get every single person I know to help. They say there's 3,000 positions that I would hire for. It would be every single person I know that's done something remarkable.
God made California for agriculture. We are in the midst of a land of plenty, a cornucopia of everything, kind of food imaginable, and yet we eat ultra-processed, nutrient-deficient, wrapped in plastic stuff. Why? What happened to us?
I think there's a much more simple explanation than people think. You know, I've said it 100 times, good intentions pave the road to hell. Okay. So when you have millions and millions of people that have to eat, you have a lot of issues. First of all, you have the production itself, which is, you know, just generally taking care of an acre of land, keeping the soil rich and putting down a seed and then defending it from all the things that want to eat it before it pops out of the ground. And then when it's a little baby, again, I'm a mom, it's a little tiny leaf. It has to grow into a lettuce. It has a requirement of protection to turn it into something. And other than, you know, I don't know, maybe saving lives in a hospital in a 911 emergency, farming is probably one of the hardest jobs you could ever have. And we're not making a lot of new farmers because kids watch their parents struggle. And so they're like, despite all our effort. And I do think that the railroad that failed in California is a reason. The reason to have the railroad is to create young farmers, because if you can make it easier for them to get in and out and still have a young life, a cell phone, and go to a disco, you know, or whatever you want to call it, you're creating, like, making farming cool, modernizing it. And so this idea that this is...
I'm putting some lipstick on it.
Right. If you think somehow that farming's easy, just remember that I'm telling you, it's one of the hardest things you can ever do is to grow food and to nurture it to a point that you can eat it. And the next layer is to make enough of that to feed millions and millions and millions of people and to commercialize it. And then to get it to a point that it's washed and it's pack washed three times and packed, and then it's shipped and that it has some kind of a shelf life and that it can stay there until someone can come and buy it. If you think that's easy, think again. It's one of the hardest things that we could ever think of doing is feeding poor and taking care of ourselves and feeding our children. So as a result of this gallant, really great idea, a really good idea, an incredible effort that America has made and other countries have made, including China and all these countries, to feed the world. Michael Jackson, feed the world, to feed the world. To create sustainable food in a different way than we use the word sustainable today. Food that will last a long enough time from the garden to the table. Okay? That's what we call farm to table. The journey in between is really far. And the journey needs sustainability. And this is enter the world of pesticides, enter the world of preservatives. And they're all poisonous. But they're killing something that they need to kill in order for it to last. And this creates this optic that big pharma bad, small farming good, big pharma bad, small farming good. But the effort we are relying on. And we have options, but they take time. And one of the options would be that our country make its own pesticides and its own preservatives instead of buying them in China, for example. And the most complicated one would be glyphosate, because glyphosate is predominantly bought in China and is poison and has plastic and makes everyone sick and has a terrible name. But it is the gold standard of preservative and pesticide. It's the one that's in everything, and the human body is used to it. So we become used to it like we become used to the cell phone, okay? We are functioning with it at a higher radiation and a higher amount of plastics and things like that. Come along a guy like Bobby Kennedy, who says, oh, no, 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 no. What we're doing is killing everybody. All right. He's right. Love him or hate him, he's absolutely right. Because good ideas pave the road to hell. We have all these people to feed. And you cannot just rip the rug. And he's trying to rip the rug. And he knows he wants to rip that rug. And he's got this huge group of people that he's got to go through to rip this rug out, to change this. And he's trying to unpack that. And it is like untangling spaghetti. It's not just vaccines. It's not all. It's HHS. Okay. It's like the Pentagon. The guy has the job of running something the size of the Pentagon. He has to figure out how to unpack this and how to get us back to healthy food. And you can't rip the rug. And every single move he makes, they want him gone. Every move he makes, they want him gone. They want to kill him. They want him gone. They don't want him to survive another day. Why? Because the cost of undoing that is so tremendous to the companies that do it. And it slows the production down because it becomes organic and it becomes ours and it becomes real and we're back in control and we have control. And it hands control back to the farmers. Right now, they're dependent on this. They can't produce fast enough. They can't compete. They can't move it. It costs 75% more for a small farmer to move something than it does for a big farm to move it. It is an impossible situation we find ourselves in because we paved our way here with good intentions and we are where we are. And miracle workers like Bobby Kennedy are doing their best. Don't hate him. Just listen to him and see where we are. And remember that he is a victim of the same circumstance that we are all victims of. Again, I repeat, it is Samson and Goliath.
Yeah, I kind of think of it as Goliath and David. How do you go up against them? How do you challenge them?
They are so big.
They are so big.
And they are so big.
And you look at Sacramento and what has happened to California, and that conflict is an apt description of a collapse almost. of California. What do you see when you look to going there?
Well, I mean, if I were the governor, I wouldn't go to Sacramento regularly. I would spend every minute I can with my boots on the ground in California, visiting every single mayor and every single city council and every single contingency of California to help elevate our management of the state to the top level. They've been gaslit. We have great mayors in California. I filmed a documentary called Mayors Matter, and I visited mayors from Humboldt County to Chula Vista. I talked to about 40, maybe 45. And Mayors Matter was an interesting read.
I bet. I got a brief sample of it, just long enough to know where you were going with it. I love local food, local politicians, local control. When we come back, I want to talk about your proposal for the 559 food train. Bring real food grown in real soil by real farmers into the city. That's going to be a very interesting one. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Elaine Kulapi, who does just about everything I can think of, including being a farmer. And to me, that's the most important one of all. But if it's time for a farmer in Sacramento, and if we can get a farmer to Sacramento, maybe we can unspool everything and get back to some farm sense, which is the ultimate common sense. Right back.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place in Bremerton, Washington, August 1944.
Bremerton was the best Liberty port of the war, and I had a secret weapon for enjoying every second of it. Roller skates. No kidding. Now, right outside the gates of the base was a sailor bar, and almost every sailor would stop right there, but not me. I kept right on going till I get to the roller rink. Most of the guys thought I was nuts, but I wasn't. You see, there was no better way to meet girls than to skate around in a rink in your dress blues. Back in those days, I was limber enough to do tricks like wrapping one leg around my neck while I was skating on the other. Yeah, most of the guys thought I was crazy. They'd see me leaving the base with my skates and just shake their heads, but heck, I laughed all the way to the bank.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-704-1662. 800-704-1662. That's 800-704-1662.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
New Farm's Bob Hofstetter.
MetroFarm is filled with marketing and business management basics that entertain and enlighten. Case studies show how successful MetroFarmers persist and prosper.
Cheesemaker Todd Shriver.
Metro Farm is a well-researched one-stop guide to the business of small acreage farming. There is so much to this book I've found helpful.
Engineer S.M. Smith.
Metro Farm's business information alone is more informative and helpful than most books that specialize in business. Get this book. You will not be disappointed.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning Metro Farm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
Do you have a car sitting around you want to get rid of? Donate your car and help veterans and their families. Yes, one fast call to the Veteran Car Donation Program and we'll come and remove your car for free. You can donate most cars, trucks, or SUVs in most conditions. The proceeds raised goes to help active military, veterans, and their families. And you get a tax deduction. Operators are standing by. Here's the number.
800-640-9509. Again, that's 800-640-9509.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Okay, we're back, and we're talking food. Getting food in the city, because that's one of the things that really captured my attention about Elaine Coletti, the lipstick farmer. talking about the need for city people to get their hands in the soil somehow. And so you have a proposal to put on the table called the 559 train. What's 559 stand for?
You didn't know? 559 is the area code of Fresno, Central Valley area code.
Oh, okay, bingo.
Right. Yeah. 559 farm trains.
So from the center out via train.
Well, okay. So first of all, railroad has been a passion of mine my whole life, because if I ask anyone listening to me, if you're not sure how things move across America, find a mile or 2 mile train at a red light with a crossing and watch it go by and start to count how much stuff is on that mile or 2 mile train. Just watch it. And think every single one of those cars has approximately 4 to 6 truckloads of material on one car. And think of all those trucks driving back and forth on our roads. And remember that it is green by design. You can move a ton of stuff across the country on 1 gallon of diesel. So people don't understand the value of railroad and the complexity of railroad. And railroad's the largest landholder in the U.S. And I ask people this about railroad in case you don't know. It is a trick question. Why did Warren Buffett buy the BNSF? And if you know the answer to this, you winner, winner, chicken dinner, I will give you $100.
Real estate?
No. He bought it because he owned a cable company and he couldn't get the cable easements quick enough and cheap enough. So it was worth buying a railroad so that he could run his cable underground. The most important thing to remember about railroad is it has access to everything. It goes across Camp Pendleton here in California and all the air bases. It has a thing called preemptive law. They are so old and so original that almost all laws have to work around railroad, not the other way around. They have access.
Easement.
They have access. They own the land. The easements that are on them, they sell to companies like a cable company. No, they were here first. They're like the dinosaurs. Okay, whatever railroads do, and they came first. Railroad came before all the cities. That's why in lots of cities, it's an X, a north and south, east and west. You know that. And sometimes they rotate the city slightly, and you're always like, why is that a railroad in the middle of everything? Because that's how everyone got there.
My hometown was named after Billings, Montana.
There you go. So rail is very important, and we need to elevate rail, because even though it seems archaic to young kids, it's very important. And the next thing is this, there's what we call class one, which are the big railroads. So those are the ones that you think of that are carrying like the big supply chain. The Union Pacific, the BNSF, Norfolk Southern, there's tons of them. They are the big railroad. Then you have things called short line. So the short line are the smaller railroads that are individually and privately owned that pick up small things and take them here. And they get things directly to downtown. And because rail is so big and the sidings are so big, you can really have big activations. And I just came up with this idea that we should be able to do farm delivery on rail. Why wouldn't we? It'd be easier. You could build a whole farmer's market on a train. You know, there's so much new technology. You can fold the train out and you could have a festival and you could play music and you could have all kinds of workshops and you could teach people about farming. And there's all this what we call unused siding. And the reason that siding is unused is because railroad wants to preserve those preemptive law rights, so they will never give it up. They did once here in California. I think it started here in California. It was called Rails for Trail. And it turned out like it was very negative for them because they couldn't get back in there when they needed to. So you're never going to see that really change in our generation. And it shouldn't. Why corrupt it? It's a great thing. We need it in an emergency. So I'm in support of it. My feeling about the 559 farm train was just this idea that we could make farming fun again, and we could make it affordable, and we could allow transportation for small farmers, and we could aggregate small farmers, because we had at one point like 88,000 small farmers in California, and that number has diminished. It's under 80,000 now, and only 44,000 of those farmers are signed up with the Farm Bureau, in large part because they can't afford the dues, which was about $275,000 annually, to give you an idea of how much farm struggles. The other thing about doing it this way is we can create water easements for water and bring water and take water out and start working with big water thinkers. Like you have guys like Ed Ring and people that write water policy, and they can help bring the understanding to people through this process about why water is not flowing and how to get water flowing, and help people understand that they cannot vote no on this anymore. Again,
but how is water connected with trains?
Well, how do you think you're going to move it if you don't have viaducts? How are you going to move a soil? How are you going to move anything big? How are you going to move anything big? Every bit of drinking water that you drink came on a train or a truck. It didn't come from California. It doesn't, because they don't let water flow here. There's a lot of problems with our water. They're easily solvable, but you've got to get those guys out of the way. Look at they haven't dredged in the Stockton deep water port. And there's billions of dollars to do it, and they will not do it. And meanwhile, we don't have water in the Central Valley. Have you driven up and down the 99 and seen this sign that say, Gavin Newsom, is watering my farm a crime? Am I stealing water? I don't understand. And they should say that, because it's unclear. Why is there no water for our farmers? Why are we controlling water?
California voted, what, $10 billion for new water infrastructure? Nothing has been done.
Nothing has been done.
Nothing will be done, will it?
It will be done if I am the governor. Are you kidding me? It will be numero uno. Numero uno. It will be pronto. Immediately. Immigration reform and water, farming. I mean, farming doesn't even rank in our top six greatest things that come out of California financially. It's a damn tech industry. Who cares if you have a cell phone? If you can't eat, who cares? Do you know that half of the businesses in California are in litigation with trip and fall and racial, like, I didn't get my day off, bad employment deals? So you want to go to a really nice restaurant? You better get behind an independent, because people can't afford it. It is actually a fact that if you open a business independently in California, you stand a 90% chance of litigation. We have to cut through the red tape. We have to let our animals run free and cut through the red tape. There cannot be a barrier for the bear. It's ridiculous.
Okay, back to the train.
Back to the 559. Nobody ever wants to talk about my train except you, and I love my train so much. Listen, railroad is an amazing way to move everything you need to move. And all the infrastructure is there. All the power is there.
Great analogy for everything else that you're trying to do. The primacy of the train as the fundamental mover, it's just a good way of seeing everything. And it gets right down to it. So it's a good thing to hold up, and people are going to look at you and go, why are you talking about a train? But it's primal.
It's also like, I found over the years when I talk to people about railroad and farming, they all love it. It's almost like being a baby. Like, they just love you. So people love farming and people love railroad. But here's the thing that's important to me is, how do you explain to our young generation what supply chain is and how supply chain affects them every single day? I mean, other than taking away their cell phone or shutting off their Wi-Fi, right? They don't really understand what supply chain is. Nobody really knows, like, if you're wearing, like, I'm wearing a green silk, like, vest. Okay, where did the silk come from? Where did the buttons come from? How did the dye get into it? What color green is this emerald? What plant makes this color? People also think, like, where did the plastic of this come from? How does this microphone work that's right here? How come I can hear you better like this? These things never occur to people. But it all comes down to the process of supply chain. I mean, even the process of evolution is the process of supply chain, if you want to make a supply chain map to teach people what happened first, what happened second, and how we get here. And railroad, to me, is a reminder of supply chain, and it makes it very simple for people. When you wait for the train, people come. Things come. The wood came. My aunt came. Look, the kids got taller. You know, it's an engagement of supply chain, which makes things interesting, especially to children. Just like farming is an engagement that makes things interesting, especially to children, because they are not bored yet. Their eyes are open and they get to see something grow. They pick a berry and they eat the berry. And they're like, this berry grows on a bush? And so for me, putting those two things together is brilliant, because it's a story and it's entertaining. And you add music and you add a gathering and you add a big brewery or a liquor sponsor, and you add, a car show and you add, it's just all of a sudden everybody's like, I just want to come here and see this thing. And I want to learn how America was built. How did we get here? And you got to put railroad in there. You got to put farmers and railroad at the very beginning. And if you want to keep it, you got to have them at the end.
It reminds me of a story my father-in-law tells, who was raised on a dairy farm in South Dakota. And yeah, he was on the railroad. They got to get fresh oysters from the East Coast in the middle of South Dakota because it came on the train. Pretty special when you think about it, to be out there in the middle of South Dakota in the Great Depression. And yeah, there's oysters.
Right? Exactly. Everything goes on rail, right? Yeah. How are we going to rebuild our Palisades, Altadena, and Malibu without supply chain? We don't have the roads, Michael, the roads from the cleanup. And I proposed a debris on rail paper really early on. It was in front of Gavin Newsom before March. It was in front of Lee Zeldin in March to try to get some sort of rail supply chain to the Puente.
Feeder rail, right?
Well, there's a facility designed for disaster in Puente Hills with the Department of Sanitation, the Sanitation District, which is known as L.A. Sands District. That is how our trash gets picked up. People don't know how that happens, but it's not magic. Okay, it's a lot of hard work, and that's why you have recycling. And what you need to do is you have to move the debris out on rail. Otherwise, you will find that you're dumping it in someone's backyard, which is exactly what we did.
You have something going already.
Oh, I have it to little, yes. And if I am governor, it will be open.
Gavin Newsom already has a train going, right?
I don't know what Gavin Newsom is doing, but to my eyes,
it's a great big new train going in the Central Valley.
It's not going to go anywhere. Bureaucrats can't build. Bureaucrats stop building. And it's all because of lawyers. It's, you cannot have a builder locked out of their process. You can't do that. That becomes a change order. That's a mobilization is the key to good building. You have to keep going. You can't, every time you stop, that's why people charge mobilization fees. If you've got to stop and start, it doubles the cost of the event, no matter what it is. You don't stop and start. Either you commit and you go, or you say no. You commit and you go, or you say no. But don't say you're going to do it and not finish.
California's high-speed rail is an evergreen project because it appears that it's going to go forever. And food.
Yeah, evergreen money for people that are trying to stop it. It's just a joke. Like, the best idea ever turned into a complete laughing stock. We needed it. We needed it. And they ruined it. They ruined any goodwill that anybody had that said yes. They've ruined it. And they keep throwing money at it without changing the problem, which is Gavin Newsom and the administration in Sacramento. I agree to stop it, even though I'm for it, because we can't do it with these people. They don't know how to build anything. You need a builder. You need me. I need to be there.
How are you going to bring food to the city?
Oh, there's so many ways to bring food to the city. Number one, first of all, stop legislating it out of the city. Okay, let's just start with that. Let's stop making fresh farmed food in a city illegal. Let's stop viewing farmers as competition in life. Let's start viewing farmers as the reason we get up in the morning, because they provide us the best possible nutrition, and we need to be killing it to get them into the inner city.
Well, I think we should be killing it to get them into Sacramento myself, because farmers, if they're successful, have had to develop a farm sense that is far transcends common sense, because it takes common sense and it adds a sense of the natural environment, of the growth and development of things. So I think what we need in Sacramento is it's time for a farmer. As simple as that. Elaine Coletti, my goodness. How did you find yourself in the catbird seat ready to move to Sacramento?
I didn't find myself here. I was put here by powers way greater than me.
You have good people behind you?
I have the best people. I have people that care about California. I have California first people only.
And we all care about California, even those of us who don't live in California, because it is America's gem. Geographically speaking, there's no place better on the entire earth. Elaine Coletti, who is the lipstick farmer and is the candidate for governor of California, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, first of all, Michael, thank you for having me on. I just want to say something in closing. California, it has an opportunity to be the California that we all know and love. But if we allow the same process to run California that we had, we will lose our state. And what we're going to lose it to is far more nefarious than the governor. It is a world organization that is trying to strip mine us. And if we were to get another candidate like that into our Sacramento top job, we would not get through the audit that needs to happen on what happened to all of our money. And if we don't think about what happened to that money and make it plain and clear, then our old manager, who is seeking the highest office in the land, will have a much easier time of it because there will be no accountability. Please think about how important accountability is when you have been given the top job and it is your job to protect Californians and you have strip-mined Californians. Please think about that. And if you want to talk more with me, I am CulottiForCalifornia.com, C-U-L-O-T-T-I, Culotti, for California.com.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.